Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 95-year-old Houghton Sawyer of Morgan Hill, California. He served during World War II with the 3798th Signal Multi-Channel Radio Teletype Detachment. He described for us one of the giant radio antennas they would use at their fixed radio outposts, transmitting encoded data from the war front in Europe back to the Pentagon. Did those giant antennas ever make you a target? Seems like that might be pretty easy for the enemy to spot.
Well, the poles are not visible very much, and the wire that is guided by the poles are not visible from a distance. As a matter of fact, these installations were not put in place until they were safe. So when I served in a place away from any activity. As a matter of fact, the war was over when I was on the high seas, and I was sent to these radio stations as replacements for those that had served for so long.
So you told us how the message is transmitted toward your fixed station, but when you're at that station, what are you receiving? What are you seeing, a printout? Are you hearing something audibly? What is it that you're bringing in and passing on?
The same very things that are sent from the truck are retransmitted exactly as they came. The message that we got was sent from the truck to the center where it was processed and then sent on landline to our transmitter site, so that there were three elements to this: a receiver station remote from the two others, the transmitter station, and the central station that processed the information and sent it or received it. So the process involved three locations, and the encoding was done in the center.
So when you receive this, is this a series of sounds? Is this a printout of a series of characters? How exactly does that work?
We receive exactly what is retransmitted. So we received the secret codes in teletype transmissions. It's teletype code, which is seven characters for a letter. And these were processed so that letters were transmitted at 60 words a minute. If you can imagine a five-letter word with seven characters per letter, it's a lot of and it is difficult to even try to understand, because now you have six channels and they're being transmitted with six more channels for what they call double mod, so that the fading is not synonymous with the fading that I get on a higher frequency. So the two frequencies are working together so that the signal doesn't fade. Now you've got two sidebands, or twice the amount of transmittal that you'd get if you had a regular transmission.
Pardon me if any of these questions are ill-informed here. So you're just hearing a series of tone of and just hearing that, you don't know what it means.
We don't know anything about what's on the wire.
But you're able to relay that exact series of tones to the next station and so on and so forth till it reaches the Pentagon.
Yes.
How did you feel about that kind of duty? Was it interesting to you? Did you feel some responsibility there?
Well, obviously we felt very strongly that we wanted the signals to get there. So keeping the transmitters going was the main object. And we had to change frequency day and night, and sometimes different because of the skip. In the terms of those days, it wasn't a satellite that you bounced off of. You bounced off the ionosphere. And the ionosphere, it changes position every few hours.
Some people might not know what the ionosphere is. Why don't you explain that science to us?
The ionosphere is a ring around the Earth with ionized air, which is like a cloud, except that it's thick enough so that it causes the radio waves to reflect from being irradiated from the ground. It'll reflect like a mirror back to Earth. Only the distance that it takes on the other end is adjusted so that it's long enough to go from nearly 3,000 miles away.
So are those calculations that you had to make?
No, that was all done for you, but we had to change frequencies in order to adjust the distances depending on where the ionosphere was at the particular time. We had north and south transmitters, which didn't really work the same way as the ionosphere did on the east-west. So those transmitters were different. And we had anything from 2,000 watts to 60 kilowatts.
Well, a few things come to mind for me here. Is that technology, and maybe you don't know the answer to this, maybe you do, is that technology that the enemy also had, or is that a capability unique to the Americans or the Allies?
The technique was unique to the Americans, and the Germans were the ones that were defeated in trying to figure out how it worked. As a matter of fact, because of this kind of transmitting, we could radiate right on top of their carriers and broadcast while they were broadcasting. So we could actually inject comments, and we did.
You said that with a bit of a smirk on your face. What kind of comments did you inject?
Whenever anything was said to the public in German, we could inject a counter situation which would tell the public in Germany that things were different than what they were broadcast, lying by the Germans.
So the German civilian population would actually hear what you guys were saying, and they would hear it in German?
Yes, we didn't do it. The people who were authorized to do that, and this wasn't something that was done regularly for any reason except propaganda.
So this would be the OSS types or some propagandists that are using your equipment to send these messages to the people who are in post-war Germany?
More than likely, it would be the kind of broadcast that you would expect people to get as a general public, telling them about the news and the other things. And the only thing that we could do would be comment on the same time at the same transmitter. So they would not know that we were commenting on their comments for their public. We would be transmitting as though we were in a conversation with that person sitting in the same room. We didn't do much of that. That wasn't the main object. The main object was to keep communication with the army and control out of the Pentagon.
Sounds like you had some fun with that particular aspect of it, though.
Yes, we did.
And I asked you earlier if there was anything, you know, secret about what you're doing, and it sounds like, as you described, that this was unique to the Americans, that this technology was something that during the war needed to be protected. Have you found out since the war, or are you aware of the nature of some of the messages that were sent back to the States via this technology, either while you were there or before you were there?
No, I was not privy to any of the messages that were carried. And it's just as well, because these things had to be kept as secret as possible. So it was turned into secrecy as soon as it was possible to do so.
Have you ever wondered about that? What kind of messages might have been passed on, and what relevance they had in the bigger picture of the war?
I've thought a lot about that, and it is quite expected that Mr. Patton, this is not at the time I was there, but when he was traveling on the Autobahn, he was communicating with the War College in the Pentagon. So they had a way to communicate exactly what the best plans were for their next move.
And again, I don't want to read too much into anything or put any words in your mouth, but it sounds like you're saying without this technology, there's a possibility that that war in Europe might have unfolded a little differently. I mean, everyone knows about the Battle of the Bulge and all the things that followed in 1945, but without that ability and the speed at which he could communicate back to the generals in Washington, that maybe some things might have happened a little differently? Is that fair to say?
Very fair statement. It's likely that the communication that I spoke about was key to making this thing as fast as it went.
And maybe even, for instance, the Battle of the Bulge, because there's an example where it was the response and the speed at which other American and Allied units got there that enabled them to push that back and win that eventual victory. And if that communication hadn't occurred in that kind of speed, maybe a lot more Americans would have died, or the bulge would have turned out differently?
Well, I'm sure it would have. Absolutely certain that the communication that we experienced, that was invented by the AT&T and privately required their teams to operate it, it would not have worked as well.
It probably saved a lot of lives.
No doubt. It's a little hard for me to comment on that because I was not there during the fighting of the Battle of the Bulge. But the way the system worked, it was obvious that this was a major contribution to the disposition of all the troops.
And it's an aspect of the war that I would guess most people listening right now have never heard of before. I know it's 70 years later, but knowing what you know about what most people didn't know in 1945, does it make you wonder what kind of technology is being implemented and taken advantage of out there right now?
Oh, yes. I have lots of experience since the war in electronics, and many of these were having to do with electronics that were used today on aircraft and Navy ships in order to conduct a high communication of all sorts. I worked on a system called a Mark 86 gunfire control system for the Navy, which could see 100 miles away and could differentiate between 10 targets and figure out which one was the worst and shoot it down. I worked for a consulting firm that worked for the Navy. This was for Lockheed in Plainfield, who invented and did this equipment. I worked with that for nearly 10 years.
Well, you always did have that dream of getting in the Navy, huh? Was that close enough for you?
That was very good. I worked a lot in the ships that were involved.
Let me ask you with regard to World War II, because you had wanted to get in the Navy right off the bat. You end up drafted into the Army. You know, late 1942, you've got all of 43, all of 44, most of 45. The war's still going on, and you're going through the ASTP and different training sites. Was there part of you that wanted to get overseas and be a part of it? Were you at all disappointed that once you got to Europe, the Germans had surrendered?
No, I was most pleased to work on something that was electronic, because that was the way I really was bent. I think the most wonderful thing that happened to me was the education I got at Stanford University. I'm a Cal graduate, and I had to be both California and Stanford, but the people at Stanford, the teachers, were those people who invented all these things.
You brought up your ties to both Cal and Stanford. I got to ask you, when the big game comes along, who do you pull for?
Usually California. My mother and my father, my brother, my sister, my aunt, and my uncle were all graduates of Cal. I was the only guy that attended Stanford, but I met some of the greatest people on earth at Stanford.
Well, and Stanford has one of the top teams in the country this year. The Cardinal took care of Cal in the big game. Mr. Sawyer has gotten to watch quite a few of those installments of the big game, but he might have missed the last 70 of them if not for a life-saving twist of fate that he'll tell us about when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Paul Everett's RV Country has 8 locations in 5 western states, including Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, right off the I-5, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. Over 55 years of experience serving the needs of RVers across the country and proud supporters of Hometown Heroes. Find a location near you by visiting rvcountry.com.
Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 500 World War II veterans have gotten to see their memorial in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328. If you're an RVer, you've probably heard about the new line of Grand Design fifth wheels, travel trailers, and toy haulers. What sets Grand Design apart is the long list of premium standard features you'll find on the entire line. You'll also find the largest selection of Grand Design RVs at Paul Everett's RV Country, with 8 locations in 5 western states and online at rvcountry.com.